Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, it's time for Bob's Record Collection. Dave Plyer in for Bob Surratt this morning. Mickey Dolenz is the last monkey standing, and he's performing in Chicagoland at the Des Plaines Theater on Saturday, October 19th, and Sunday, October 20th at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles. The Monkees were TV, radio, and record companies and the music business all in one. Add in a splash of comedy and the band and the TV show became an international sensation. The Monkees' first single, Last Train to Clarksville, was released in August of 1966 and quickly headed for the top spot of the Billboard charts in tandem with the band's self-titled debut album, which held the top slot for 13 of the 78 weeks it remained in the top 200. By the time the TV series aired its final episode in March of 68, the Monkees had seen three new albums top the charts. The final tally, 16 million albums and 7.5 million singles sold in a mere 2.5 years. Here is music legend Mickey Dolenz.
Hey, hey, we're the Monkees. People say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Wow, what an intro. You should introduce my show with me on the road.
I'd love to. Well, I mean, honestly,
you're
just somebody I have really grown up with and have been able to, you know, see you generationally since I was a kid. Like, I was thrilled to see you perform in 2011 with Peter and Davey. It was the 45th anniversary tour. It was my kids' first concert ever. And I got to it was their first concert ever. And I got to tell you, you sound better than ever, my friend.
Well, thank you. I work at it. I train. I try to take care of myself. And I work on keeping my voice in shape. You know, you have to when you do that many kind of concerts. I actually started a formal training kind of late in life when I started doing Broadway musicals, and you know, that's 8 shows a week,
and
some of them require a lot of big singing, so touch wood. You know, my parents were also singers, and so I learned from them, and I think, frankly, little bit of it for sure is genetic, you know, but I'm hanging in there.
Well, I was gonna say, you came from genetically from a family of entertainers. Your mom and dad were both in the business,
both singers, both actors. Yep, my mom played piano, my dad sang light opera, that kind of stuff. My mom was a big band singer and sang, you know, Billie Holiday, bluesy, you know, kind of stuff too. And my sister and I, we grew up. My sister does the show with me. She'll be there.
Cool.
We grew up, absolutely, in a showbiz family. It wasn't your typical sort of Hollywood, Beverly Hills showbiz family. We lived out on a ranch with horses and chickens and stuff. And then, as you probably know, I had that series when I was a kid called Circus Boy.
Yeah, that wasn't any local production. I mean, that series ran on NBC and ABC. That was a big deal.
Oh, it was a network show. Yeah, yeah. Like the Monkees. In fact, it was the exact same studio.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely. Screen Gems Television, it was called at the time. Now it's Sony TV. It was Screen Gems Television, and it was, as you say, NBC, and the same network that the Monkees showed on. And both of them took place almost exactly 10 years to the day.
But you were playing guitar a little bit early on, too. I mean, but that was kind of a side thing. I mean, but you were, you know, you were focusing on...
Well, again, my family was musical. Into music.
Yeah.
And my father got me originally starting classical guitar, Segovia kind of stuff.
Great way to start.
And, yeah, I was 10, 11, you know, years old, and I was okay for a little kid. And then I would take my guitar when I started going to junior high, middle school, and then high school. I'd take my guitar to parties and play a little bit of, you know, Malagueña or something. And the girls would say, "Do you know any Kingston Trio?" And I said, "I'll be right back." Hang down your head, down, Lulu. And that got me into folk music, of course, early 60s. That's what my generation was getting into. And then that morphed into rock and roll, and I started playing in cover bands, doing rock and roll stuff. And I talk about it a little bit in my solo show. I do mostly monkey material, of course, but if I do something that's non-monkey, I usually have a story. And for instance, I do Johnny B. Good by Chuck Berry, and I tell the audience it's because that was my audition piece for
That's right. And I'm thinking about this too, Mickey. So how did you get the call for that? Because I know there was like eventually like 500 people that auditioned for this, but did they know you from Screen Gems? I mean, just like you said, the security guard, they knew who you were.
I didn't go to the cattle call. One doesn't go to the cattle call when one has had his own series.
Right. Yes, of course. Of course.
No, I had a private audition because, of course, I was, even though the circus boy had been, a number of years earlier, I had done some, kind of one-off guest starring things over the years.
Right.
In my teenage years, Mr. Novak and Peyton Place and some of those early, late 50s, early 60s television shows. So, no, I had an agent, and so I went to a proper private audition. And then, and it was extensive, those auditions. Boy, I'll never forget. It was way, way more extensive than a normal television series auditions, where normally you'd go in and read, maybe get a call back and maybe have a screen test. But in this case, there was acting and singing and playing an instrument and improvisation and scene study. And, they clearly had in mind that they wanted us to you had to be able to sing and play to get through even the first audition. You had to be able to do that. So clearly, they had in mind that they were going to, hopefully, if the thing went on the air and it did well, that we'd go on the road.
Mickey, long before MTV, the Monkees really pioneered the music video.
Yeah, we didn't call them music videos; they were called romps.
Was that right?
We called them the romp, and every script had a romp in it or two sometimes, and that was to have footage to do something over the song, the new song that was going in the show that week.
Right.
And so usually it would have been a chase scene. But, I hate to claim paternity in these cases. if you look back at some of the movies, Hollywood movies of the 30s and 40s, they had music and they had dance routines. And look at the Marx Brothers. They would have video over a song.
Interesting comparison.
And so there are other examples of music, Busby Berkeley musicals. Look at that stuff. So there are other examples. And, but in terms of using a 3-minute video to promote a 3-minute song, I guess we probably were one of the first or the first to do that. But we called them romps, actually.
Romps. Yeah, no, I mean, it was marketing genius, really, to have those in the middle of shows. And it was so fun, too, because, I mean, I grew up, I was born in 67, so I discovered, the Monkees a few years later, obviously, and watched the reruns not only in syndication in the 70s, but then MTV ran them for a while, and Nick, and now they're on Antenna TV. I mean, generations have been able to discover this program. But then you had to go on tour. I mean, at some point during all this, you're doing TV, you're doing the music and recording albums, and now, we're hitting the road and we're going out in concert. I mean, that was a big deal.
Well, again, as you said, that had never been even attempted before in exactly the same way. But all, there had been a little crossover. Look at Ricky Nelson, He recorded, he had songs out, but not to the level and not to the degree that the Monkees did. It was a really concerted effort, by the radios, the record company and the television company and the radio stations. But that was the plan. It had been the plan all along. Otherwise, they wouldn't have bothered to cast guys that could sing and play.
Sure, that
they would have just faked the whole thing and you know, for whatever, a very Hollywood, you know, sort of tradition, which was done for decades. So they obviously had in mind they wanted us to eventually get on the road. It was interesting. I had months to practice the drums. I was a guitar player, as you know, but and I said, you know, I'm a guitar player, and they said, yeah, but we have enough guitar players, so you're the drummer. And I, you know, my attitude of going into a Hollywood television series, I was sure, great, where do I start? And then the next day I started drum lessons, kind of like similar to Circus Boy, when they said you're going to be the Circus Boy on NBC and you're going to ride an elephant. And I said, I said, great, where do I start?
Yeah, exactly.
and I had elephant riding lessons.
Wow. Well, let's talk about your drumming style a little bit. It is so unique, and I love when you play the drums on stage.
Well, thank you. I have great fun doing it. You know, I'm okay at what I do. I'm certainly not any kind of a session drummer. You know, I never had to play anything that I hadn't already recorded. Mm-hmm. But I love playing, and I do love playing. I play a little weird, you know, it's kind of backwards, the setup. And I played even on this, latest album we did, Good Times. And I do love playing. When we do monkey shows, I play
you do everything.
A lot, but when I do a solo show, I don't tend to, because over the years, you know, us singing drummers do tend to come down more often and sing up downstage, because frankly, you know, it's like it's pretty boring to go to a concert and not be able to see the lead singer who's
sitting behind
a bunch of cymbals.
Right.
So I talked to Phil you know, in the past, and I've talked to Ringo, and you know, it's inevitable. If you're singing the lead, people want to see you downstage singing the lead.
And speaking of the Beatles, I mean, you got to know these guys. I mean, you guys were going along very similar paths, and at some point you guys got to get together and hang out a little bit, got to know each other.
Well, quite a bit.
Yeah.
But way back from the 60s on, I mean, you know, the thing about the Beatles is they got it. They got what the Monkees was all about.
Yeah.
That pop sort of excursion into reality versus fantasy, that whole thing. They got it. John Lennon was the first one I remember ever saying they're like the Marx Brothers, and he was so right. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
In fact, the Monkees was a whole lot more about the Marx Brothers than it was the Beatles. Because on the television show, for instance, we were never famous. We were never successful. Whereas if you look at Hard Day's Night or Help, which are obviously wonderful movies, mm-hmm. the Beatles were famous. They were the Beatles, and they were successful, and they... And that's what it was about. But on the Monkey show, on the television show, we never made it. We were always struggling for success. And that, I think, is, again, one of those little key elements that the producers wisely incorporated. And that's also what helped, I think, sort of resonate amongst all the kids around the U.S. and the world that were in their basements and their garages, you know, trying to be the Beatles, because ultimately that's what the Monkees show was about. It was about this imaginary group living in this imaginary beach house trying to be the Beatles.
Yeah.
And
great guest stars.
That's what it was about.
But it was fun, and it was light. And you know what? I got to tell you something. It surprises me that you say you were struggling from a TV show's perspective to be big on television. And yet the show, 5 decades later, still, you know, is so popular with just about every generation. You know, people love watching that show.
I think that is one of the reasons, is that it was about the struggle for success, and everybody, especially as a young teenager or early 20s, you're trying to carve out a space in the world, and that's what we were doing. We were struggling to make a living. I mean, it does beg the question of how we afforded a Malibu beach house when we never got any work.
Oh, that was the fun of the whole show.